Good day to you. It's Brens with Benefits and it is the 16th of June 2020. Like, share, subscribe, follow, etc. I'd say I'm not going to tell you again, but I'm going to tell you again. And I'm also going to tell you again about Wordistry. Wordistry sponsors the show, and Wordistry is a service that is there to help you out with all your digital marketing needs, Google Ads, website, SEO, Facebook, Insta, content, all sorts of stuff, the things that are going to help you get more sales and hits and leads. Wordistry's helped get me further up the ranks in Google and all that kind of stuff. There's many things about how social media and websites work and how they're structured that you might not be thinking of. So just go suss them out, www.wordistry, that's wordistry.com.au. Go give it a scope. Today's episode is with Richie Jarvis. Now, Richie's been on my list for quite a while now, but he happened to get in first as he also runs a show slash YouTube channel called I Am Drummer. And aside from documenting his own drumming career slash journey, focuses a lot on in-depth gear reviews, as in drum-related gear reviews, and he's also branching into interviewing other players. So this is a bit of a cross-promotional kind of affair, I guess you could say. Richie, I first met him when we did Drummers Summit Melbourne, which was, if you're not familiar, it's something that Stan Bicknell organized way back in the day for drummers to get together, share ideas and jam. Just look for Drummers Summit Melbourne on YouTube if you want to get some more info and see what was going on. And me and Richie just, we hit it off because we had this shared mutual nerd love of Vinnie Colaiuta. So it was just off to the races. And we discussed that during the podcast. So for me personally, this whole thing was just a great way to obviously catch up and reconnect and just have one of those big drumming nerd outs like you would back in the day, because as you know, with time and age, it gets a lot harder to get those, you know, it's not like mum dropping you off to the drummer's weekend when you're 14, etc. But anyway, so as you can imagine, this is a very drum-centric podcast. We discuss technique-related things, gig, you know, all the usual gig stories and pitfalls and, you know, the things we're learning coming up. And given that this is also for Richie's show, there's a bunch of info about yours truly as well, whether you like it or not. And now, so just there's a couple of notes regarding this one. Now, this was recorded on Richie's end. This was a Zoom conversation. So where, you know, if anyone's ever seen like when Zoom automatically records stuff, the audio is not what it would usually be for this podcast. But the bonus is that there is a video version of this one, which is going to be on Richie's channel. So I'm doing the audio podcast. You can watch the video version on Richie's YouTube channel, which, if you remember, I Am Drummer, if you look that up. And in some ways, it's preferable because some of the drumming ideas might make a bit more sense with all the accompanying gesturing and what have you. But anyway, let's just get on with it. So this is Richie Jarvis.
So, Rob, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
I think I said that at the start, like 20 minutes ago. It's always the way. I have to say, I absolutely love your drum room. I'm very jealous.
Thank you.
I'm very jealous.
It's like Stan Bicknell actually gave me a bit of a kick up the ass, because when I sort of had a chat with him on the podcast and we were sort of talk about life stuff, and he kind of just highlighted the fact that I have this, because like I've had this for at least 12 months, I think. And it's about 8 minutes from my house. I've got a key. I split the rent with another person, and but he's here in the mornings. I work during the day, so I'm here in the evening, so we don't cross paths. So, and it's ridiculous. It's like, it's, you know, tell like 14-year-old Rob or even 30-year-old Rob that this was a thing that I could actually have, short of like in your own house, no dramas. But I kind of actually think it being separate from home is better in a lot of ways. It's crazy, but it's, you just get used to things so easily. Sometimes it's just like, you know, like, oh, geez, can can't be bothered going to the studio today. It's just like, dude, what? Like, you know, so, and that was kind of the thing that, like, you know, when me and Stan were talking about stuff, he's like, man, that's the way he said it, he goes, he's like, dude, that's the dream. I'm like, it is.
Yeah, because he's set up in his Rumble Coffee factory.
And he sets up and tears down every session.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. That's dedication, because, you know, when you're a drummer, you go, I just want to set up and just leave it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to have to move.
Yeah, exactly right. Wow. Just about every, I think, pretty much, either it was the situation he was in at the time, like, but I think that they may, I could be wrong, there may have been a time period where he was able to leave it set up, but at that particular time, he was setting up and tearing down every time. And I was even thinking back to before I had this set up here, because I just had like this secondhand Roland TD3, the ones that are like all rubber pads, like, you know, even the rubber hi-hat cymbal. It's like, yeah, pretty rough going. And it was just kind of good for, like, you know, if I had to like learn songs or just stay on top of things for gigs and stuff. But even then, it was just like getting me on there. And this was just like the other end of my house, let alone getting in the car, et cetera. The motivation was just so, so thin. And
it's, you know, it's actually, I just, yeah. A funny thing is, a student on Monday was asking me, because he's a new student, worked in the day, comes home and lives with his parents, and says, you know, how do I want to buy an electronic kit? And I was like, are they better than an acoustic? I said, well, you're going to have to get an acoustic at some point, because electronic kit will make you sound so good. Like you turn on, you start playing, you're instantly, you know, much better than Justin Bieber kind of thing. And it's like, and I said, it's all also about muscle memory. The biggest issue I have found if you play an electronic kit for too long is that when you get to that acoustic kit, everything isn't harder, like hard to play. It feels harder, like every surface feels harder. So when the mesh heads came out, I'm like, cool, everything, you know, it's all meshy and soft like pillows. And then it's almost like I got onto an acoustic kit. I couldn't play it for half an hour because my wrist started to hurt. You know, my right knee started to, I'm like, that's never happened. It's because I became soft over the course of a month of just playing electric kit. I don't know if you've ever found that you've kind of stuck to one, then you've gone to the other for.
Like my previous band, which is like a real, like, you know, technical death metal kind of thing, where you sort of got to, you know, it's, if you're not on it, like, you know, you're off it. Like, so.
And that's actually like feet. Like, if people say, how often should you practice feet? Well, if you want to have good feet and keep good feet, it's a daily thing. Yeah. You miss a day, you notice.
Yeah. And it's like, I was explaining this, I was teaching someone yesterday and helping him with like double kick stuff. And it's like those muscles don't want to grow. Like the ones that you have to train, like I'm not meant to be exerted like this. So you just have to like really hammer them. And so the only way to sort of get around it, I mean, the feet thing, it was just, you kind of just got to just go ham. But yeah, I would always use like 3 or 4 stick sizes up to kind of compensate for that. And that more or less, you know, like it would kind of get you most of the way there dealing with that, that difference in difficulty. But once I got this where it's all real kit all the time, it's just, my playing's just gone through the roof. It's just been,
I will have to say, I've been a big fan of yours for a while now, you know. big fan of yours for a while, because I mean, so you've done some Terra May stuff, you've done Hate or More. You're probably how I describe, I actually described you to another drummer as like the quiet assassin. It's like you don't know what he's doing, and then he's there. And then when he's there, it's like, I'm not just here for a gig, I'm doing an East Coast tour, and now I'm in Singapore, and now I'm touring with, and then you land for a week, and then you're suddenly doing a whole run of shows with, like, you know, with like with like Cherry Lips or whatnot. And then you have a couple of days off, and now I'm back on tour again. Now I'm doing another session, you know. So it's like you don't hear about really the behind the scenes stuff. It's just like, I wonder what Rob's doing. And then the next day, you're at the airport flying out. You know, you're just consistently working, you know. It's it's you're not kind of staying still, not staying stagnant, which is a very easy trap to fall into, especially when you're a drummer.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, it's I definitely have that problem of like not being able to say no. Like, that's definitely been a thing. Although I'm getting better at it. But I tell you what, like, not the no gig thing. You know, I'm very fortunate because I've got a a full time job. It's, well, I feel fortunate now because obviously I would rather be doing music all the time. But for right now, it's less like, well, you know, but being able to just play all the time and just really just like settle into like practice, like I'm working on like, say, content related things, but it's still centered around the things that like I want to do. You know, my playing has just expanded so much because like, because when all I'm doing is just prepping for the next gig and, or I've like said yes too many times and I'm just like spread like super, super thin. I'm kind of just like, it's like sometimes I'll get in these situations where it's like, I've just got to get things ready for the gig. And then it's kind of like, at least how I feel, it's like, man, I did that metal thing at 90%. I did this jazz thing at like 80%. I did this covers thing at like sort of, you know, 95%. And it's like I started getting weary of that because, yeah, you're not doing anything at 100%. So it's, you know, because, and then it becomes like a very business conscious thing as well. So I, you know, hit up, like, it's afforded me a lot of super cool experiences and sick opportunities. But I tell a lot of students, the ones who sort of, they kind of have that kind of hunger. It's just like, even if, like, say, if you really, really want to expand and you wind up being like 80 or 90% good at all these different things, the people who are hiring don't care because they want the 100% rock drummer or the 100% jazz dude and all this sort of stuff. So it's like, it's a cool artistic endeavor in that sense. But as a business thing, it's like, something, you know, you got to be wary of. So I've shared a lot of things out of my playing over time. And plus it's like, it's not just like, oh geez, I better do this so I can get more money. It's just like, it's like, if I want to develop my sound better, and that's where my focus has sort of turned as well, where it's just like, rather than like adding more things into the playing, it's just like, well, let's just take what we got and actually make it sound sicker and work on tuning and the feel and all that kind of stuff. That's where my attention has turned, and that's kind of made it a lot easier. It's like to, just look away from, you know, all these other things, which makes Vinny all the more nuts because he has all that stuff and executes it at the utmost highest level.
He is a rare exception. He's like I've heard stories and I've had a quick chat to him over the years. Very, very quick in person.
Can I stop you really quick?
Yeah, of course.
I've sort of had like a, in my head, Vinny's been someone where I can't decide if he's someone that I would like to meet.
I know what you mean. I've met a couple of my idols, and I've been lucky. They've all been really, really nice, and a couple of them I've actually considered as close friends, which is good, which is really lovely. The whole Vinny thing is that there was a gig, and he didn't have a 20-inch Zildjian Oriental Shine, and I had one, and it was just like, "Hey, do you have one?" Yeah, because I use one, you know, regularly, even at cover gigs on my left for some stupid reason.
I know.
Yeah.
Hey, that's a good reason, man.
It's a good reason.
At least you know what Brenzy's got you.
Yeah. Thanks, mate. And I said, "Where are you?" I'm in the car. I'm on the way to see Vinny. Like, he's like, "Can you bring it with you?" I'm like, "Sure. All right." So, you know, taking all my other cymbals, and I'm like, I'm walking in, and he went, "Cool." He takes it out the back. He gives a quick tap, goes, "Yeah, it's great. No worries, mate. Thank you so much." And he just walked off. I'm like, can I have, okay, all right, I have no idea what's going on. I get up there, I'm sitting front row, like literally sweat distance from Vinny's kid, like dead on with a couple of mates. Did the gig, and like I watched it, like it was phenomenal. You know, his mistakes were perfect. You know, I couldn't even tell what he was.
Yeah.
You know, and they had the intermission, and then they did the second set, and it was with Tal Wilkenfield, Jeffrey Keyser, and I think somebody else as well.
I was at that one. Yeah.
Yeah, you had that one, and then I'm like putting my jacket on, finishing my drink, and I'm trying to call my mate, like hello, like where's my symbol? And I found him, and he went, oh, it's on stage. I'm like, that's my China. And he's like, yeah, I had to borrow it. The one we had wasn't at the right kind of tone or pitch, and we just hoped yours would work. I'm like, okay. So when I went to, I had to go then into the room to get the bag. And Vinny was standing there, and he was all sweaty. And Vinny doesn't really like to, from my experience, doesn't really like to shake hands or whatever.
I've heard about this. Yeah.
And I was like, hi, look, I'm sorry to bother you. I'm actually about to leave. Can I grab my bag to grab my China? And he said, oh, man. And he gave me a hug. And he went, thank you so much. God bless you. I'm like, okay. My life's complete. That's it. I'm done.
Yeah, done.
I grabbed the China and we had a quick chat. I left and I bumped into him at NAMM in 2015 or 16. And he was just walking and he was like Stevie Wonder. People was like, oh my God, it's Vinny, man. Oh,
yeah.
Hey, let's see where we're going. He walked in front of him and I went, oh, yeah. Hi, Mr. Collier. Because Tal Welkenfield was there as well. I went, you know, hi, Tal. Like, hi. Yeah. And she's like, oh, you're from Australia? I said, yeah, from Melbourne. And Vinny's like, oh, yeah, no, I've been in Melbourne, done some gigs there. I went, yeah, I'll let you in my China. And he went, oh, yeah, how's it going? Yeah, good. And then he's like, oh, well, nice to meet you. And he left. And I've never had anything other interactions with him. So, but you do hear of stories and things. Yeah. But, you know, like I've had bad days too, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like, look, it's you don't get that level of, for lack of a better term, genius without a few, you know, chinks in the armor. Like it's just, there's only so much room for all of that, you know, artistry that I feel like things like decorum, social cues, like just all that stuff doesn't fit.
It's like I've had lessons with drummers, like going to their houses and overseas and whatever, and open the door and it's like, oh, cool. Cause what, first thing is like, hey, man, nice to meet you. What kind of practice pad do you use? I've got Reflex. I've got this. I've got Prologis. I've got, I'm like, I don't know, a practice pad? You know, and apparently Vinny answers the door with a stick and a pad. You know, hey, man, how's it going? You know, do you want a practice pad? No. Because he's always playing. He just doesn't stop. So I think it's one of those things like you get to, it's either to get to that level, you don't stop. But once you get there, you can't stop.
Yeah,
and that's and like I have to admit I'm the last couple of months, I've been really horrible with practice, like you know, and I'm about halfway through my album and I just went, you know what, that's good, but right now it's like I've got my wife at home, so she's working from home, I don't have a spot to play. So I have the silent kick going, you know, just to keep limber and keep ideas going.
Yeah.
But I don't have an acoustic space. And then we thought, oh, you know what? We'll deck this room out. We'll gut it. We'll take the walls out. We'll, you know, foam line it. We'll fill it with space expanding foam and we'll do the roof and build a room in a room in a room and all that kind of stuff. And then now we find out because we've got house issues that we can't, well, we really shouldn't do that because we don't know what's going on with the house, so we won't go into that. Damn. Yeah, it's bad.
Yeah,
it's not. You know, it may or may not come out in the woodwork at some point. But yeah, I'll tell you about it later on. But it's always fun. But one thing I do want to is talk about. I've got two dogs.
I was going to say at least one.
there goes the other one. Is I never saw you really play in person until we did that shed session with Stan and Chris. And I was like, man, he's an open-handed player. You know, that's rare. You don't see a lot of that these days.
That's something I don't even think about. I keep forgetting. Like when someone brings it up, it's just like, hey, open play, open. Like, oh yeah. And it's like, yeah, it's really weird. I'm like,
was this a natural thing? Like, did you wake up one morning and go, I want to play drums, and this is how I'm doing it? Or was this did an instructor say, hey, you're really suited to this? Are you left-handed or are you... I need answers, Rob. I need to know what's going on with this open hand. Because it's so cool. It makes so much sense. It really does.
I'm glad I don't think about it anymore. Because sometimes when I think about it like too much, I'm like, this is like something like not cool. Because everything's cooler when you're crossed. You know, when things are crossed, it just looks, you know, like when you do the Vinny thing and you cross over to the China.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, it's sick. But like, I think it was like a second or third year into playing. Who was it? It was like, I think a teacher like saw me, or my drum teacher saw me like writing something down with the left hand. And it was like, oh, like, even though it's like, my playing was obviously fine up until that point, but then he's just like, oh no, you've got to like swap the whole kit around. And I'm just like, what's, to me in my mind, I'm like, I'm not starting again. Like, and then so I was having lessons at school, and then like a private teacher. Private teacher was like, he was like super old school. Like he was more like, he was on the, got me into like the old fusion stuff. And Billy Cobham style, he's like, oh, you know, try this. And I was able to sort of pick it up. Like, you know, it was, I was able to sort of just keep going from there rather than start again with swapping all the way over. And I'm so glad, because it's like, for those like multi-band, like, you know, gigs where you're sharing backline and stuff, and then there's that guy, you got to swap the whole thing around.
Yeah, there's always, even at a dinner party, he wants coffee and everyone says coffee, and there's always one person who goes, I'll have a tea. always one. I remember seeing John Watson I can't remember, it might have been Vic and Linda Bull, and I was at a John Farnham concert. So Vic and Linda was the opening act, I'm pretty sure. And I remember going, how's this going to work? John's left, and he's a lefty, and Angus is a right. So I'm not sure how this is going to pan out. So all they did was they swapped around like the floor tom, snare drum, and just kind of moved it around. You wouldn't have noticed, but you know, it's that being that guy, you know. And of course, the amount of gigs you do. Everyone's at dinner, wants a cup of tea.
pasta, steak well done. Boo!
Yeah. what were we talking about again? Now I've lost the train of thought.
Open-handed play.
That's right, open-handed play. So anyway, we'll get back to the real fundamentals of it, right? I've watched you play, and it's probably besides like Billy Cobham, I can actually look at open-handed play and going, it looks so right. It actually, you make it look right. It looks smooth, you know, and the way you've set your kit up too, where you've got, you see a lot of open-handed players will have a ride like up here. Like you might have Carla Boca like up here or whatever. But yours is, you literally transition from the hats to the ride. It is so smooth. It is so, it's almost perfection how you've done it. You know, I'm not trying to blow wind up your butt, but what I'm saying is like how you've set it up and how you configured your kit with being open-handed, it makes total sense.
That position, like it took like this, but like it has to be like the longest I've had that ride in that spot. And it's like, it's sort of, you know, it goes up, it goes down the angle, but it's like where it is now is like the longest it's been. And it like is the most, because it is just like the most natural sort of vibe. And like, I thought, I used to think it was like to the left, but whenever like I see a photo, it's actually like almost in the center a little bit. Whenever I look at like other, at least, you know, most of the open hand, dudes that I see, like the really well-known ones, just, you know, like the Simon Phillips and Carter Beaufort, and it's like kind of like this thing, it's like right up here. And I kind of get it because you get like that access to the hats.
You get it. When you think about it, going from, let's just say you wanted to do like a double hand, you want to have your right hand on the ride and left hand on the hats. Yeah. This then becomes, you kind of can't do that. You have to do this. Whereas you're going from here and now I can do that. So you literally, your setup means that you are completely open-handed on the foundation, like the foundation symbols. Like you're actually not crossing over at all.
I definitely didn't go think that deeply about it. And, you know, I think part of it was also, You know what? Like now I think about it, because when you were talking about like those mechanics, I may have done it like subconsciously in that when I would have been like 18, I did like, you know, Steve Gadd's The Solo, like that piece. The
Crazy Army and, solo, yeah.
Not Crazy Army, it's the other one.
Yeah, the other one.
And it's called The Solo. Which has like, you know, that sort of typical, like that Gadd ride and hats groove, where it's like all singles. And I think that's probably, that was like the, to play that groove, like, and I'm playing it as, yeah, I played the whole thing as transcribed, so with the right hand leading. So in order to do that properly, it's just like, because if your ride's over here, then it's like, well, you know, what the fuck? But if you're going, duk-a-ding, 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 Gatlin, yeah, rather than having the ride over here, it's, yeah, if it's like, this is a nice little middle ground, because I can just sort of play the ride and hats, you know, just as singles, just, yeah, but just right here. So super uncomfortable at first, because like it's, you're having to play it as a righty, but yeah, that's probably why I would have wound up there, because I have had like to the far left on the other side of the hats. I've had that in the past.
Yep.
Just about anywhere, you know, anytime my playing wasn't any good and I thought I could solve it just by moving this and it would fix everything. But like, yeah, that could be a big part of it, because I remember that being a big part of getting that piece up and running.
Now,
I'm working on Crazy Army at the moment.
Ooh. It's I think I got through about by memory the first half of it the other day, and
yeah.
I was like, yeah, because I learned how to do the Crazy Army solo. John Corniola made me do it, and. He made me do it because I did something in class back at Boxall College, as we've all, you know,
there you go.
Been through. And I learned how to do, I don't know if I did it right or wrong, but Steve Gadd, 84, Zildjian Day, where he plays the solo or a big part of the solo, and he's doing the single foot, the 16th notes.
Yeah,
and I'm like, how does he do that? His leg's only going up eighth notes, but he's generating.
It's doing like a
but it took me a couple of weeks of watching it over and over again. This is a kid, so I'm wearing the tape out pretty quick, and I can see his reflection in the bass drum head, in the pinstripe bass drum. I'm like, I can see what his foot's doing, but I don't know why it's doing that, and then his knees do it, and so I obviously. He is doing 16th notes with his foot, and he's only doing an eighth note with his knee, kind of the motion, like, you know, the stick, like a stick motion. So I really kind of looked into that, couldn't quite figure it out. And then I really started getting into a lot of Virgil, and he was doing a lot of one hand, one foot, you know, like 16th notes really fast around the kit, both hands. I'm like, can't do that, but I'm going to try it, you know, and worked it out. And then one day I was just playing on the kit and worked out that rocker motion.
Yeah.
And this is before Google and YouTube and all those lovely places. And had another friend of mine, it's like, I've been working on this. I don't know if it's right or not, but it kind of works. It's kind of went with it. And when I got to Boxall College of Music, I was playing in C1 performance where you had to do, I think if we had to do, if I remember correctly, one performance a fortnight, I think it was. We had to play at least a piece or in a band. I ended up playing in a band and doing that at one point. And John was in the room and he dragged me out like after classes and he grabbed my shoulders and goes, you have to do the solo. Like, you have to do Crazy Army. I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, I own it, but I never, you know, tried to play it. And then I entered the drummers competition in the up and coming. And so I worked on the piece for a couple of weeks. He said, right, film all your pieces. Film, you know, you did all the standard Dave Wickles, you know, contemporary drummer, Isle of Magic, you know, did some 1/32nd of Will Coxon's All American Drummer. Did all the standard, you know, when you're a Melbourne drummer doing the comp. You know, I wonder if year after year the judges are like, I wonder what he's going to play.
Yeah.
So John only played my Crazy Army solo. He said, I'm not going to show anything else. And I think it's at 120 BPM. I think it is. I think it might be a bit quicker. 126, I think
it is. It's a solo?
Yeah. No. Crazy Army.
Really?
Yeah. And I was able to play it at speed with the single foot. And I was like, I did it, you know, and then I went and did the live performance of judging in front of everyone and in front of all the judges. And I think it was Don Famularo, you know, John Frank Corniola, like Darren Ferrugia, you know, kind of your idols, you know, in Melbourne.
So you were in the top three?
They did the top 10. And that whittled you down to the top six, and the six was the live performances. So I went in and they said, right, you know, John's like, just do Crazy Army. That's it. Don't have to do it. I'm like, I brought my CD with contemporary, you know, and no, just do this. You know, you fold the piece out and you start playing it, you know, and I got seventh, which was, I think, not bad for one piece. I guess it's not bad. I didn't get to the finals or whatever. But that whole rock of motion thing was a complete fluke. And it wasn't until Gab was out here, 2 years ago, I could actually ask him, am I doing it right? Like, and I got to ask him. And then I went on stage at the clinic and he showed me. I'm like, oh, cool. So I'm doing it right. Like,
sick.
Doing it for 23 plus years and, you know, no idea how I even came about. But anyway, that's the Crazy Army solo. I've never done the solo. I've never tried it.
But it's also like, I mean, if you're doing like whatever you're doing and it's making the noise, then you're doing it correctly.
It's like the JoJo thing, you know, if it's the sound. You're
throwing a trash can out a window.
He's got perfect technique.
Yeah. Dude, like that, I've used that so many times. Like the second you started saying, oh, the JoJo thing, I'm like, yes. Oh,
man,
it sums it up so perfectly though. And it's sort of like,
I do add to it though. I tell my students, if you're throwing a garbage can at the window and it makes the exact sound you need, you've got perfect technique, as long as you don't hurt yourself. So having the fundamentals of grip, you know, I've got one drummer who is a massive fan of a certain YouTuber, which I will not divulge the name. We won't go into that. And he mashes the left hand like straight on the snare drum, like, but you know, and he holds it, and you can see when he's playing it. By the time he hits it and then goes to thinking about playing a ghost note, you can see the tension in his arm. I'm trying to explain. It's like, everything has a purpose. Everything, a way. If that's the sound you need, then great. But there's a way you can do it safely, because at some point, all that energy that's going up your arm is going to come.
You got to pay for it.
It's going to come back to bite you. It goes like what? Like, you could have carpal tunnel. You can get arthritis, like advanced arthritis. Like at your age, you know, you don't be 28 going, I've got carpal tunnel. I've got to have my wrist done. Yeah. I mean, you're out for 6 weeks, if not longer. And it's just a simple technique change, and that's when he said, oh, but this YouTuber does it. And I'm like, yeah, but it's dude, that's the internet. It's like, you know,
and especially when they're like, you know, it's, you know, the, like a lot of these YouTube people, they're like, they're big established, you know, players. It's like, hey, working for them. And it's like, and you know, we might not be thinking of the same person, but you know, I immediately thought of like a really like well-established player who does the same thing. And some people have sort of said, oh yeah, but that's, they actually do that to get a sound, because that actually gives you a more muffled sound. I'm like, more moon gel. Like, nothing is worth these.
Hey, Play-Doh. Don't ask me what I play, but you know, wallet, you know, big fat snare drum. You know, it's and that's the thing. It's like, but the thing is, like, if you need to do it once or twice, you need to get a sound at some point, absolutely. But if you're going to bury it, and I play trad, so even it's even worse, because it puts so much pressure on your thumb, you know, on the fulcrum.
Oh, yeah.
So, and I'm now, it's been 6 months, and I'm at the point where I'm like, I'm actually starting to get a little bit worried, because you're tensing up so much now that when you're putting your stand, like your hand on, or stick on the stand drum, I can visibly see your hand start to shake, like you're holding it so hard.
Oh, wow.
So yeah. I've given him like basically a whole bunch of exercises for the next 2 weeks to basically play everything at, you know, a 99% reduction of volume and just think about, and I said, I really want you to try this. I've never tried it because I know I'll break it, but I want you to do this. I want you to gaffer tape an egg to your snare drum. Ooh. And that's what I want you to tap on, right? And that's all I want you to do, singles, doubles, parallels, slowly. And he's been doing really well. I said, right, and I'm going to show you some great players, like not just, you know, overseas players like Vinnie Gadd. And I introduced him to Vinnie Gadd, Weckl, Thomas Lang and whatnot. But even Thomas does it a lot as well.
And he's got the scars.
He's got the scars. He knows, but he's like, yep, go for it. And I was, watch these players. You'll see that when they need to do it, they can rip it out. Right, yeah. But if he said, but I really want the air, and then he came out and said, I really want that dead, muffled sound. Mm. I said, then you don't need to buy a $3,000 snare drum, for starters. Mm. You know, you could put a Remo or an Evans ringer around it. You could put Moon Gel, gaffer tape, the Taco, which flips over. Whatever you want to do, if that's the sound you need, then that's just a tuning and accessory issue. That's not a technique issue. And
yeah.
And so far, I saw him play the other day quickly. He showed me a Zoom thing. Like his hands improved 1,000,000% in a week.
Yeah.
And he's like, I don't have elbow pain. My shoulder doesn't hurt. My knuckles don't burn. You know, I'm like, then does that say for you, and this isn't, you were maybe doing something not badly, but just not shown a correct method or a method to get you out of that. And I have this argument with people all the time. Like, it's just like, please don't do that because I don't want to see you get hurt. I don't want to see you out on the sidelines.
Yeah, it's like please just, you know, if it requires like you know, like one of those like oral spectrometers or whatever the fuck it is to show me like exactly why you have to destroy your finger to or any other part of your hand and arm, above all other things, you know, the gels and the big fat snare drum and all of those other things. If that's what it takes for you to be like, see that frequency there, that's, you can't get that with these things. Just like, okay, well, probably not the move then. Hey, like, cause it's like, it's, how does it sound, you know, at the PA? That's kind of like, whenever like, you know, once again, like I was, as long as my students aren't hurting themselves, it's great. Like I'm shit for that too. And it's like, whenever they're sort of confused about doing this or that or the other, it's just like, how does this sound coming out of the speaker?
Like, yeah. It's like, and you know what the thing is though? And then if you even think broader than that, the amount of people in the audience who are going to notice or care.
Yeah, exactly right.
I guess in the gigs you do, the music you play, especially with the bigger gigs, you will actually have a lot of musos and especially drummers will pay attention to what you're doing because it's not a not just a cover band. You're actually doing touring act, original music, you know. So people are buying tickets and lining up in line to get into a venue to watch you and enjoy the music, not just like, I'm going to the bar, you know. So they're actually going to pay attention to it. So, but before we continue along, I have to ask you, that beautiful kit behind you, what is that? Is that a pure... Reference Pure.
It was just like,
because you have been for a while endorsed by Pearl, Zildjian, Remo, and Vic Firth.
Not Vic and Zildjian. But yeah, so this is the kit that I got when I that I signed on, and I was just kind of like, give me the deepest sizes possible out of these diameters. So, you know,
And when you think about it, sorry to interrupt, like, so anyone who doesn't know who Rob is, Rob plays a lot of like metal, like he's a metal guy, right? And not just metal, but that's really a good forte of yours. And you don't play a really big kit. You actually play minimally and it works so well. It's actually really refreshing to see as well.
I've never like felt that like, I've kind of like stuck with like the, I don't want to just, I've run out of things to play. I'm just going to do the same thing, but on this third stack combination or whatever. Like it's
eight, you know, these 8 toms I've just added today kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, I did a gig. If anything, I've like gone backwards. I did have like the 2 kicks for a while, but it was purely for the like for the triggering aspect. It was it's just much more accurate doing it that way. It's like,
and if you're doing bigger gigs,
it's sick. It's so sick.
Well, why wouldn't you have 2 if you got 2? You know.
Yeah, yeah. So, but when I was doing a tour with I Built the Sky, which is like even though it's prog and jet and all that stuff, it still has like a punk rock thing going on, and we did a gig in Perth and the back line was just a 4-piece, and me being me, I just like had a like sort of this internal meltdown where I'm like one up, one down, no, like, because it's I've always just been, you know, 5-piece, nice cruisy, you know, 2 toms right here for your rolls and what have you. But that gig actually wound up being just super super fun and kind of brought out like that sort of punk rock kind of spirit, and I actually haven't gone back. Like I've sort of just for the fun of it, yeah, you probably can't see it from here, but I've started setting up the 10-inch tom on my left.
I can just see it next to your hats. Yeah, no, I do see it.
Yeah,
yeah.
I've started doing that just for, and yeah, just for, like, it's like firstly I'm looking at it, I'm like, it's there, like, you know. So
when you think about it, like, and I'm trying to think in the mind of Rob. You know, so you're.
Don't do that.
No.
You could have badly.
It's not that messy up there. Can't sleep. it makes sense. So if you're doing a rock fill, like, and went from, yeah, say, you had 10, 12, 14, right? Basic, or 10, 12, 16, whatever. And you, yeah, wanted to go ta-da-do, bar, right? Yeah. You're open handed. You can go ta-da-do. And then your left hand straight in the crash, and then you're back. Yeah. So that it actually makes complete logic. Like it's completely ergonomical. It just makes so much sense when you start doing things, yeah, like that.
The annoying thing is that like I've just like committed insane amounts of time to doing like all right-handed fills. So it's kind of like I kind of haven't really taken full advantage of just being open-handed, and you know, like right now. My right-handed lead is more competent than my left. Like I actually have to work on my left hand lead, not my actual left hand,
but lead, the principle. Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, which it's still there. And when I have to lead with my right, I still have to sort of like, you know, like think, depending on what the fill is. But the transitions aren't as nice because, you know, like, you know, if you're like, say, you know, you crossed over, your right hand's here, and you just transition straight into your fill because you're already playing eights in that hand. Whereas like if I'm already playing, you know, eights over here, and then it's like then the fill starts here, so it can feel a little bit like, you know, like, you know, changing the reels a little bit.
Yep. Yep.
Whereas like, you know, that continuity isn't there. And, you know, it wasn't until like I was hearing stuff on recordings where it's like, you know, I'm doing just these weird little things that just, they're not particularly pleasing, but I can hear that they're purely there to set up the fill. But yeah, this is just kind of more to make me think a little bit differently about fills. Like, and also deliberately like tuned it like way up as well. Okay. So it like, it doesn't sound or feel like it's part of, just, you know,
it's almost
1, 2, 3.
It's almost like an auxiliary tom. It's not an actual, yes, right. That, yeah, makes sense. No, I get that.
And yeah, it's good for the jammy vibes, but I'd like to work it into like say the album I'm working on with Mirrors at the moment. So I'm sort of seeing where I can integrate it. I took it to a cover band gig. I think I hit it 3 times, just to, because that's like, as you know, it's like it's a fairly safe environment for like, it's going to bring this along and, you know, see where it could work without, you know, being, too much of a pain about it. Cause I've seen, you know, you take the, I've seen you use like the pancake, is it the pancake drum or something like the.
Yeah. I still have it. It is wrapped up in a whole bunch of bubble wrap at my parents' house. I used it quite a lot. It's about a 3-month period. It was like, I love this thing. You know, it's like, oh, you know, like,
yeah,
take it everywhere with me, you know.
Like, so great.
It sounds through a PA, and the last time I used it, the guy had a D6, like, right underneath in the middle, you know, maybe about 2 weeks away from it, and I hit it, and it wasn't like a thud, it was like a, you know, like a massive, just like a wolf, you know.
Yeah.
And I hit it, and even I felt it through the floor, you know. And I'm like, right, I'm going to use this all night, you know.
It's so going to annoy everyone.
And I had the worst separation as well. I had 10 by 8, 16 by 16, and then a gong drum. It's like high, low, and then just earthquake, you know. It's just completely.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, I did a feel, I think I was doing a Belinda Carlisle track, and I did the feel, and I ended on this floor tom, on the gong drum. And the whole band is turning around. It's like, yeah, like but you can't do that in a Belinda Carlisle. And it just came out like doing the big 80s rock stadium ends, you know. And like and then I was doing the ladder, you know how you do, you know, right hand, left foot, left hand, right foot, you know, I was doing and I was doing that around the kid, and then like the singer of the band turned around and go, oh, go back, don't go high, go down.
Yeah.
You know, just at the end of the song. And it was great. But then carrying it around, it doesn't fit in the case. So you've got to carry it. Like, oh, look at me. Yeah. You know, and you're walking through the car park at Crown, like, hi, you know. So then eventually I started doing more wedding gigs and then doing more corporate stuff. And it's just like, well, this is one more thing to carry. I got to carry a whole extra stand for it now.
Yeah.
And so I'm not saying I'm lazy, you know,
yeah.
But I actually had this conversation with another drummer, will come out soon, about gear. And like you've got, but when you obviously did having double kicks at some point, I used to take the most stupid amount of crap to a cover gig. Yeah. And we're not talking like Palladium Crown or Stakeout or whatever it was, just a pub gig. I had, I think I had, my Pearl kit, my Pearl BLX, which I still got, 8, 10, 12, 14, 20 by 16, 2 snares, 3 sets of hats. So I had a set of, 14 quick beats, 10-inch recording hats, some 14 or 13 A-custom hats. Then I had 4 crashes, a China, a ride, and 2 splashes. To play Jesus Girl, you know, and I did that for you, and a rack. How was it a rack?
Yeah.
So just ridiculously stupid. Double pedal, you know, you got a double pedal. Yeah. And then I got the Yamaha kit, and then I went, you know, I went 10, 12, 14, 16, 22, dropped the rack, and then went stands with the same amount of crap, you know.
Yeah.
And then I scaled it back eventually and went 10, 14, 16. You know, and then I think that did for a few years. And then one night I decided to, I just got an 18-inch floor tom. And I'm like, I'm going to use this tonight. And I rang up sound engineer and said, I need extra mics tonight. So it's a 32-channel desk, not a problem. I had 10, 12, 14, 16, 18, 2 snare drums, 2 sets of hats, and like stupid amount of cymbals. And I'm like, I got to the point, I can't do this anymore. Like I'm getting home at 4 in the morning from a 2 a.m. finish. Like, so now my gigging kit, and this is even corporate. I use an EP kit, which is 12, 14, 20, flat bass cymbal stands. And I can carry my hardware in a 22-inch hard case and my bass drum in one load. I can be,
oh, wow,
2 loads. I'm out.
That's sick. I'm
done, you know.
That's sick.
I just got like I did my back at one point, you know. So I've actually been lucky. I've never suffered a drum related injury, but they have caused me. And it's usually the load in, the load out. I've stretched my bicep a couple of times. That was pretty horrible. You know, jarred my knee when I fell down a set of stairs. And I've done some weird things like, but I've never hurt myself actual playing, like, you know, like got in a carpal tunnel or anything like that. But the whole gear thing, that's why I look at you and you go, Rob plays a lot of like prog metal, whatever. And you look at the kit and go, are you sure? Like, are you positive? Like, it's a bit small, but it's actually not. It actually works really, and you do a really good job of what you've got.
Oh, thanks. And like, there probably is like a bit of laziness in there too, because like when I did that one I Built the Sky gig with the four piece, not only was like heaps of fun and had all the other stuff, I'm just like, sick, one less thing I have to worry about backline wise. Great. So, and but a lot of it does, yeah, come back to that that playing thing. It's just like the additional sounds don't seem like the solution for me. And it's not like, and I don't, and that's not to say that I judge other people for doing it, because I'll hear people, they'll like, you know, they'll do like a fill that creates like this little melody between like a few splashes. I'm like, ooh, you know, like that's really nice. And
yeah, and you go, that was perfect there and then, that was great. But you listen to their playing in general, and that's their style. They'll do little bits of color, you know.
Yeah.
But then you see guys who got these, some people just go out and go, I'm gonna get the biggest kid I can get, you know.
Yeah.
And then they don't use the tools they've got available to them in a practical sense, you know.
Yeah.
I'm running 2 up 2 down right now.
Yeah.
A 17 crash, a 15 and a 22 ride. That's it. I haven't got anything extra. You know, it's just, even then I'm thinking I might ditch the 16, just have 10, 12, 14. Because most of my playing is between the 10 and the 14 anyway.
Yeah. But it does something to my playing as well. Like there's, Dave Haley, the person I share the room with, he's got like, he recently got himself like a new reference, and he's got, so what do we got? It's when he's got it all set up, you've got, 4 up, 2 down. So it's like, it's, yeah, yeah. It's like 8, 10. I mean, like, you know, like for people who like are aware of him, like he's like he's like pretty much like the Aussie death metal guy, but not in strictly death metal. He's very, very tasteful. Just, you know, he learns off Darren Faridja.
Nice.
So he's got like all those tasty elements too. Like he's excellent. And but you know, still Dave Lombardo to the grave. So you got like 8, 10, 12, 13, 14, 16.
Right.
And whenever I sort of, if I like sort of sit down and, you know, and like have a bit of a play, it's just like all gone. Like I can't do any of, it's like, and it's not even that like, oh, I can't do this thing that like, you know, that I normally do. I can't pull it off. It's just, it's not there. It's just like file not found. And then I walk to the other side of the room and it's just like, it's like, oh, there it is. It's just, oh
yeah. You
know, it's so bizarre. It's like I'm trying to do it and I can't. It's just not there. You sort of find that when you go from kit to kit, because like nowadays, I'm in full Keith Carlock sack riding mode. I've always been a huge Keith fan, but now it's like, you know, I've got coated heads on everything. I've got no dampening on anything. I've got that. There's nothing in my kick drum. I actually found out that I've got to have a little something in there, because I had a, did tune the kick up a bit, and I had like a cushion in there. And then I think it was changing heads. I'm like, I'm going to have nothing in there. And I actually found that the,
was it the head, head in the batter was kind of like
vibrating? Wasn't so much that. I think it was actually the reflection off the bare wood was a huge problem. It was like the, even though like the cushion, when it was in there, wasn't touching either head, but you were getting like that really awful, you know, that basketball noise, like that, you know, like boing kind of thing.
Oh, the beach ball.
Yeah, the beach ball thing. So I think you just need, you know, even with like all the open vibes, to have something in there that's, even if it's not contacting, to just absorb a bit of that, but still have like the big open thing, because it's like when you've got more space after your note, you just feel less compelled to do as much. Like you've said what you need to say. When you just go like, doof, it's like, yes. And and also getting onto the bouncing the beater off the head as well. That was a huge one, courtesy of having a lesson with Brody Simpson a while ago. We talked about that, and we were, did it from here. And I just turned to the kid. I was like, one sec. And I'm like, oh my God, just that. Cause obviously I've been burying, you know, this whole time.
I'm a natural off the head guy. I know, weird.
That's cool.
It's when I'm doing like four on the floor dance tracks, you know, when everyone's like, in the crowd kind of thing, that's not a problem. But I just find if I'm playing in general, I hit it and it comes off. But that can cause, I found, if I'm playing, so I like to have minimal stuff in my bass drum. A little bit of something touching both heads, just a little, you know, it could be a jacket, a towel, you know, I won't go the full pillow. But then some sound guys are like, I'm getting a weird kind of like a low end, like a hum, you know, like what's going on, or a rumble that's after the bass drum or hitting the note. And it could be even after the second set of a third set gig. And I'm like, oh, I play off the bass drum. So I'll do a full hit, like hit and hold it. And then it goes away. It's just gone. It doesn't even happen. So then it's like, I'll have to put something in your bass drum. And then I had to give the sound guy some bad news. I said, remember, at this gig, I'm actually playing a full head. So kind of can't. I have to take everything off, you know.
Oh, right. Yeah.
You realize, oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, because he mic'd it up and it sounded great. It sounded phenomenal. But I was going through the whole full front head, you know, and annoying sound guys, you know, a lot.
And that also encourages, like, the bouncing off the head as well, because like once or twice where like I've sort of been using someone else's kit and it doesn't have a hole cut in it, and it's like if you're someone who buries into the head, you feel the full, like all that air that's in there like fighting back,
and you hear that like this almost that second bass drum ghost note.
It's horrible. And those times were times where with Hadel Moore, where I was like playing with triggers, like you're talking like a double fire, you know, double fire city. So luckily one time was in a recording session, I borrowed a kit and I'm like, luckily I had my stuff as well. And I just ran and quickly took my head off the front, swapped it over. And I'm like, it's never experienced it, but it turned out, you know, discovered how much of a difference it made, because now the air escapes out the front and you feel it, like you hit it and just goes out the front. Now, not so much a problem, because like I've added that into my playing, off the head thing, because it's the sickest. Like when I was like mucking around with it, it's not only do you get all that additional resonance, but it's a much more pure tone as well, because when you bury, you actually push the head and you get just the tiniest little pitch bend from, you know. So, but also having said that, it's good because now I've got both, because I was doing a recording session recently and I was like self-engineering. So naturally I've gone down the rabbit hole. So I was just like, you know, mucking around with the kick sound a whole bunch and just being so limited in my abilities. I'm just thinking about like what I can change on my, the drumming end to get more of the sound that I want. And in that particular case, it was like burying was actually the option, because it just controlled the sound more, got more attack. So it's like, well, cool. Yeah. Like I've got both of those, you know, at my disposal now. So,
sweet.
That off the head thing has been like the biggest thing that I've added to my playing.
I think I started doing it simply out of just, I was watching an instructional DVD or DCI video or something. And then I was having some on and off lessons with like Darren and some other people as well. And we were talking about it. And I said, it doesn't playing on the head, actually burying the beat, it doesn't feel right to me. So, and playing off the head actually came more natural. So, I guess you could say I was lucky, but I mean, they both have their pros and cons, so to speak. You know, I find if I'm playing four on the floor for too long, I start to get a little bit of an ache, and my leg will get tired because I'm constantly doing this, you know.
Yeah, and you're constantly in motion. You don't get to like rest at the end of
it. I know, you get to rest at, So if I'm doing like a 12-minute, you know, ABBA medley or whatever, I could get to 10 minutes and go, I might need to go on my left foot. you know, which has happened you know, occasionally here and there. But so, as I said, it has its
to be fair, like, because, you know, my covers work is just, you know, it's all fill-in stuff. So I don't have like a regular covers gig. It's just like, hey, you free, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I'm the same. That's pretty much all I do. Yeah.
Yeah. And look, and yeah, we could very well get into this because we've sort of both had like experience over a long amount of time, because it seems like that kind of is the scene. But just real quick, when I do get those calls, I actually, it's not like, oh, it's covers gig. It's like, it's just so easy. It's all the same shit. I actually have to actively condition for a covers gig now, for like the three sets of just like relentless two and four and eighth notes and all that kind of stuff. It's like, I actually have to condition in advance.
Well, yeah, because you're like on the other end, like you're doing prog rock and that side of things. It's like, it's really, it's full on, it's physical, but it's not a consistent,
it's a different
kind of physical exertion. Whereas playing a cover
band, the sets are shorter too, you know, it's like, yeah, you're doing like a 45 minute set, but if you're doing like, 340s plus of like, and they're all sitting in these tempo range where it's like, it's, you know, very like high power, high intensity in terms of like your volume, and also just like the sheer like volume. It's just like eighth notes, two and four, just like, just relentless. So like, yeah, last time I sort of, you know, just jumped in. It's like, let's have a set list. Yeah, we're good. You know, see you Saturday. And just, you know, went in and did it. Like, I was feeling it like 2 days later. Like, it was just my hips and shoulders. Yep. And during the gig, I was just like, just get, you know, tired, just the whole thing. So, next time, like, so it's not even, you know, dusting off the tunes. It's like,
it's just getting physically prepared.
It's like, I'm running through Jesse's Girl. I'm running through Run to Paradise. Like, just to get my body, just to get my body back into it. So I can make it through.
Stakeout was four sets, so 10 till 2. And I think the weirdest week I did there, we did 8 gigs in a row. So I'd go to work and was literally across the road. And I'd literally just drive my car from across the road and park it, like downstairs. And so I'd turn up, do the gig, get back in the car, drive home, get home at, you know, 'cause I'd leave the gear set up kind of thing, and then get up at 7 in the morning, go to work, you know. Yeah. And I didn't start playing till 10, but there's no point in me going home. So I'd practice or catch up with friends, go have dumplings at Tattersall's Lane, at Cammy's, whatever, you know. And so every night for 8 nights, and I think the only night I got a break at the start of the gig was Christmas. I think it was New Year's Day. And I was actually doing, no one was there. It was completely empty. And so the first two sets I had off. And then we were thinking, maybe I just won't play tonight. Those two boys will do a trio thing. And then out of nowhere, just like, you know, people like packed. So I was doing four sets a night, you know, for 7 nights. And the last gig I did 2. So, but I mean, that's been my kind of life. Like, so I'm, when someone says, oh, 3-set gig, I'm like, okay, you know, it's not a, you know, not, but if someone said to me 45 minute full prog, you know, thrash metal, I'd be like, I'd call you and go, can you do it? You know, or I need some serious lessons right now for a good solid week about how to try and do this gig, you know, because, you know, you get to the age and you get to, like you were saying, like, you know, I don't know how to say no. Over the years, I know where my capabilities are. Like I've been asked, can you do, hey, do you want to join a metal band? I'm like, I'd love to, but my feet just aren't conditioned for it. They're not, I mean, it's not that I couldn't get them there, but I'm just not made like that, you know? Mm. So those gigs come up and those studio calls, like, you know, can you play thrash? I'm like, I probably could maybe guess it, you know, make it okay, you know, but
yeah,
it's, I can't, I just started to say, look, I can't guarantee I can even pull this off. So, and then I just reel out like three other guys' names, like Dean Kennedy, yourself, Chad Blaster, you know, all those guys, and go, these are the guys who they excel. This is their listening pleasure, You know, I mean, I listen to Meshuga. I actually really like Meshuga, you know.
Yeah.
And I go, I could handle Meshuga. Like, I could listen to the Destroy, Rise, Improve, like, all the way through, nonstop. But then I have to give it a break because
it's a lot of info.
It's a lot of info, you know. Especially, if, you know, Future Breed Machines, one of my favorite tracks they've ever done. And I saw them live a couple of times. So, you know, you see me there going, yeah. Like screaming out to him and like, you know, what did you do last night? And he goes, who did you go see? I said, oh, I went and saw, you know, you know, basically a metal band like thrashing it on stage. You know, I was near the mosh pit, but I wasn't joining in. It's like, don't you play in a rock cover band? Like, don't you play groove stuff? Yeah, man. But like, but if you saw my playlist on like Spotify, iTunes, whatever you go, it makes no sense. There's no continuity to it at all whatsoever. So,
yes, likewise. But yeah. Meshuggah is a different beast, particularly live. Like what they've been doing over the past few years with their live show is unlike. I will unequivocally say that Meshuggah is the best live band I've ever seen.
Oh,
like their sound, and you know, and now they've got like that light show that's just completely programmed to, you know, to what they're doing. It is an experience unlike anything I've just like. I'd seen them previously, like a whole bunch of times where they just come out and just do the thing, but they've just sort of hit this thing where they've just created what they're doing into a real experience. And I think it's because they're kind of like, you know, I think even like the biggest fans probably just get a bit weary of just like five dudes in black t-shirts just moshing and playing this thing. Now they've got this insane stage, all-consuming stage set up with light show coupled with the most ridiculous live sound you've ever heard played to utter perfection. Where like,
an animal. He's just like, you know, and they play some of the music 20 BPM faster, and it's still tight
and slower. Like there's sort of slower breakdown bits where like I've gone, just yeah, they'll go it the other way. Where like, and I'll sort of, you know, afterwards gone and found like a YouTube video where, you know, someone's filmed it. I'm like, I swear that's slower. And then sort of played the video and then like tapped it out on a metronome and then gone and found the recordings. Like, yeah, they slowed this bit down by 15 BPM and it made it unbearably huge. And because like there might be a bit where say everyone stops and everyone's on click track and then they all, their timing is so spot on that they all, there's like, it's just like everyone all at once, just perfect transient. Like if you just like zoomed all the way in, it would just be this perfect line. And it just, it hits you. It's just like, oh, like your body is just not ready for it. It's
like when it's
stunning.
I saw On The Verge many years ago, like in the 90s. Yeah. And they did their normal, you know, Dream Theater cover set, like album. And they did Killing the Name Of, right? And you know how when it comes from the intro into the verse, it slows down by like four beats a minute. It's like...
But, sort of like that.
Yeah. And they started the track. I'm like, yeah, it's pretty good, pretty heavy. I'm really digging this. And then they came in and their tempo had dropped the exact same amount in going. And all the musos are like, oh... and it was absolute perfection. Anyone who could do that is, they've got definitely kudos to them, because that stuff's really difficult when it's not like half breakdown. It's like, oh, this section is 15 beats per minute slower. You're like, how does that work? I have done it to click tracks before where you're doing medleys and you hear, like, you might have a
riff. You do the ABBA medley where you got to like change into, you know, Mamma Mia, and then you go like, yeah, you know,
yeah. It's like I did a rock medley where there was Cher in there as well, and Whitesnake or whatever, and the tempo would, you know, they would try to make it a little bit more even, right? But then it's like, daka kaboom, gonk, 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 da. You know, because then your body is this. I want to play faster, but it's like conditioned to that 4 minutes. And now I have to play, you know, 30 beats a minute slower.
Oh, so this would be like the full song, then the full song, then the full song kind of thing.
Yeah. I think the weirdest set I did, and they threw it at me at the gig. They went, oh, so you're okay with that last set medley? I'm like, what? What are you talking about? Oh,
classic.
It's a 42 minute long basically no stopping medley. It doesn't stop. I went, you get a break to have a drink, you know, bits and pieces, whatever. It's to a click track. I'm like, I'm sitting there going, dude.
For real?
I'm filling in for somebody else. I'm actually filling in for the filling, which is even weirder. And this is at a wedding, and it's a 42-minute, like, okay, I need to write this down. And then went, like, how am I going to go through a 42-minute medley in? We'll just do some changes. We just do the bits and pieces, whatever. I'm writing it out on napkins, bits of paper, like, you know, like little notes and stuff. I'm like, right, here it is. It's all laid out, you know. Everything's good to go. You know, right, cool, all right. This has got to be messy. I'll do the, you know, here you go. If I can do it at 80%, my 80% is going to be better than, you know, the crowd's 80% because they're not going to know the difference. Yeah. Right? So door opens up, my little notes just fall out. So I'm like, right. So I'm looking at things because bits and pieces would go, we have two bars interchange of this and we have a bar of that in the middle. I'm like, right. Well, I don't know that now. And then it was just like 42 minutes of just a heart attack of stress. Like, I don't know what I'm doing. Like, freaking out. I'm going, if I'm going to earn my $400, it's right here, you know? And of course, you're looking at the baseball like this, you know, like, just, I need, please watch, you know? Yeah, no worries, no worries. And then the whole band goes back to their perspective spots and don't turn around. Give you nothing. So I know the songs, which is good. But the endings are all different, you know. They've got some Toto endings in there, which are those real, like, almost semi-elaborate, like, or, you know, I kind of know what that... I've heard you guys do it before, like a demo tape you sent me, and like, oh, okay. Gets to the end of it, and it's like I'm panting for a drink, I'm sweating, you know. I'm like, and they're like, yeah, you did great. I'm like, that was the worst set I've ever played in my life. That was horrible. It's like, no, man, you did great. You did a killer, you know. And when you did that fill in the middle, like, I'm like, no, that wasn't a feel. That was me dropping a stick and like going, oh, I'm God, picking up a stick and go, ah, don't like being an animal for, 8 seconds, just trying to figure out where I am. But yeah, it's like those kind of situations,
I'm kind of, it's weird. It's like, and it's probably like really bad. Like I'm kind of like good with it now in the sense that maybe I'm just eating shit too many times where it's like, oh, it's going to be one of these, is it? All right. You know, and I think I did like, and I kind of have like, for better or worse, like earned like a reputation is probably that saying yes thing where it's like, you know, 24 hours notice. Yeah, Rob will do it. And it's like,
you get 24 hours notice. You're lucky. I get like the phone call, like, what are you doing now?
Oh, wow. No, I haven't had that one. Oh, man.
I get that probably a lot. Like, I'd probably say maybe...
Dude, that's pretty... Yeah.
50% of my work is generally like, hey, I'm like, oh, where do you live? Oh, I'm in Cranbourne. Great, we're doing a wedding at some winery half down the road. Are you free? You know, I'm like, I don't want to go to a wedding. Because they don't tell you. You're like, I don't want to go to a wedding. Whose wedding is it? It's like, drummer can't do it. Can you do it?
How does this happen this often? How does a drummer fall out of the gig that close to the gig that often? That is crazy.
I don't know the drummer. I just cool down, just let me know. I'll bring my gear, it's in the car already or whatever. But usually if it's around summertime or, you know, footy season, had too much to drink, that's always been a good one. And then I've had calls like what are you doing Saturday? And it's Thursday. You're like, nothing. I'm just like, you know, I've actually got the Saturday night off. It's great, cool. Can you fly out to Singapore tomorrow? they don't ask you, do you have a passport? It's like, can you fly out? Well, I could. I'm sick tomorrow. My boss, you know, back then.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. I just need your full name, your date of birth, you know, on your passport, all your passport details. Gig pays this much. You fly in the Friday. You fly out Friday morning at like 7:30 in the morning. I was like, cool. And you're flying back out at 11:30 that night. So it's a red eye and, you know, it pays this much. And you're like, okay. And you have that moment, cool, all right, but just bring cymbals and a snare drum if you want, you know, pedals, but it's a whole full back line. You're like, okay. And it's that moment where you hang the phone up and go, like, what just happened?
Yeah.
And you kind of go, yeah, they're not going to book me a ticket. This is a joke. And then you get an email half an hour later with your boarding pass. Like, I guess I'm going, you know?
Yeah.
And then you fly in, you get picked up from the airport, you get driven to the gig. Massive corporate billion-dollar company, like, you know, yeah, production of the works, whatever. You're doing all pub gig songs, you know, I'd run a parrot, all the normal, some ABBA, you know, you're doing, and some requests, whatever. It's like, oh, do you know any Akka Dakka? You're like, I guess I do. Yeah. I know, you know, and they might throw some songs. Do you know any Akka Dakka? You're like, oh, AC/DC. Yeah. Like, yeah, I do. Yeah. No, I know some. It's not a problem. And you do the gig, you're in the car back to the airport, right? And then you're just like, okay, we'll just pay you cash. You know, and it's like, okay, cool. You don't think about the money. You just think about, I physically don't even believe I'm still here. Like, how did this happen?
Yeah.
And it's like, they pay you
cash. I may as well have just taken a taxi here, you know?
Yeah, it's like, all right, so, you know, I've got like a lot of cash. I'm like, this is incredible. I love this. This is great. And then that happened so regularly that I didn't book Saturday night gigs. Hey, what are you doing?
Wow.
Yeah. I think the worst situation I've been in is that kind of overseas gig. It's like, I've had a phone call at 4 a.m. and that, like, can you fly out to, you know, Western Australia to today? I'm like, today? What do you mean? It's like, yeah, as in like in 3 or 4 hours time, because our singer or our drummer is stuck with the volcanoes cut flyover. It's, can you make it here? I'm like, yeah, you book it. What's it pay? You know, you find out the details, and I usually don't even care about the money because it's so awkward situation.
Yeah.
Even just to help out, like, you know, I'm happy to just do the gig, you know, and you fly over there and it's a great hang, you know, and you stay there for a day or two. Like, even then, those things, you get a phone call from a mate going, hey, what are you doing next week? Oh, you know, I got work and, you know, gigs and whatever. Hey, do you want to come to Fiji for a week and do a gig? You're like, yeah, of course. Cool. How many gigs are you doing? Just one. So they're paying for you to be there for the week after you've done the gig. And you fly back. You know, I'm like, I've just been paid for a week holiday. It's brilliant. You know? So I get like people down the road, hey, can you do a gig tonight kind of thing? Like, yeah. Can you get here in half an hour? Like, to be set up and sound checked, like, by this time? You're like, yeah, I can do that. Those are the kind of gigs I get called for a lot.
That's intense. I mean, and as I was like alluding to earlier, like, you do that enough times, you know, you kind of just get used to that kind of pressure. And a lot of the time is when you talk about the covers thing, it's like, look, no sweat, you know, we'll work out, we'll flesh out this ending as we go. Hey, how do you end this? You know, like, particularly if it's like clicks and stuff, you know.
What version of Jesus Girl do you do, the extended ending, or would you do the radio? What do you do, you know?
Yeah, things like that.
And then sometimes the people go, there's two different ways to end it. You know, or there might be a song where you go, oh, there's no bridge section in that edit, and there's on the, you know. So you go, oh, yeah, cool, so you don't do it, all right. You know, and you can kind of cover things up.
And you sort of get to that point as well, like, where, like, you know, even just from the click sound, you're just like, you're like, oh, yeah, they got their backing track from this site, so it's probably going to have this ending on it, or like, you know, like, you go, all this kind of stuff.
Or you hear, you just hear the click track, you go, ah, oh, Manny.
Manny always had that particular sound. It's like, Manny puts cues in his tracks.
Yes, he does. I'm saved. And that, and then the band goes, man, that last song, you did it perfectly. I'm like,
No,
thank you so much.
Although nowadays, like, I haven't heard of one of Manny's for quite a while, because everyone uses those, the karaoke tracks, and like the click sound is dreadful.
You've got to crank it out. I've been fortunate. A lot of people I work with still use like Manny tracks and whatever, and other people's, but those karaoke ones are always like, you hear the click, you go, this is rough.
We're in for it. But
it's like, why put it on MP3? Must just put on tape. It's bad. So, all right, well, let's talk about some business, because we've been talking for a while. Rob, you also run your own podcast, which is called, now, how to say, brilliant name, Brens with Benefits.
I can't take credit for it. It was like, I think more than like one friend like suggested it. And I think when I I can't remember like if I posted that name, like sort of, you know, just typical like, you know, Facebook survey kind of thing, whether I had that name or someone commented the name, or I said, should it be this? And it was just like, it had, but just, everyone just, it's like, oh, just give the people what they want, I guess. So, and it like, and it's funny because like it, you know, it kind of like ties in because like everyone that I'm interviewing are, you know, they're all friends. Not necessarily with benefits, but they're all friends. So it's like, so it's, that's kind of all the premise. Like I'm not necessarily like looking for, you know, oh, this guy has, you know,
benefits.
Yeah, but yeah. Like it's like, oh, you know, this guy has 500,000, you know, YouTube subscribers. I want to get him on and have some weird conversation, you know, about like, oh, so when did you start playing drums? It's like, you know, no, I've got a lot of very interesting friends. You know, who I have great conversations with, who I want other people to hear as well. So, that's, yeah. So I have like, there are people on there who are, they're just mates of mine who are just like, I find incredibly interesting, but I am also lucky to know a lot of, interesting people who are also like, say, established musicians, you know, such as yourself and Stan and, you know, Roland from Marvelous Sky, you know, people that I play with and that side of things too. So it's, yeah.
Have you, I guess this is a question that, I mean, a bit of twofold. I mean, we could both kind of answer this one, but how have you found getting people on to the show or getting people like involved in it? Cause, I mean, I have to say I've been mixed with or hit with like people who are like, man, I'll come over now, you know? Oh yeah. I'll be there like tomorrow. Do you want to do it tomorrow? How about Thursday? Yeah. I'll bring donuts, you know, like, yeah.
Yeah.
No, but then you got people like, can you send me a list of the questions you're going to ask? And you're like, I don't really ask questions, kind of talk. We just figure things out. Like, yeah. Oh, but can you itemize the exact content you're going to have and leave it to an hour? And I'm like, that's a lot of
things. Are they like very established kind of people who, not, or are they just kind of like,
no,
they just don't like surprises.
That's really, but then again, it's really funny. I reached out to people all the time, just like, even, yeah. I'm hoping to have somebody on one of these ISO cast things, hopefully. And I just reached out and went, hey man, you know, big fan, not stalking you. Just wondering, I have stuff all subscribers on my YouTube page. But, you know, content's content and I like to kind of dig out your brain a little bit and try to figure out, you know, your music's amazing here. You probably won't even read this, but, you know, if you want to get on an episode, we talk about this, music, life, you know, general just crap in whatever goes kind of thing. And this, I think I'm not going to hear from this person. I'm not. They're here on... Not like, you know, pond scum level, yeah. You know, yeah. And 30 seconds later, cool, win.
Sick.
And you're like, okay. I'm like, oh my God. Send me an email to my email address because I just happened to be on Facebook at the time. Sent him an email and went like, hey dude, you know, I know, I mean, I can't, because I don't pay anyone to be on these things because I don't have any money to pay for anyone to have content. So I said, just say thank you. I will send you this, like as a bit of a thank you because it's available in Australia and not in your country. And he went, don't be ridiculous. Happy to talk like drums, gear, you know, and all that kind of stuff. I'm like, this is incredible. But then you get some other people where you send them an email and maybe a message on Facebook a few days later or in a week or a month or a year or whatever. And I go, hey man, I'm just following up. Would you be keen? No. I'm just like,
just like hard no.
It's like, you know, it's just like, oh, you know. So you have these like peaks, like, yeah, I'm really motivated to get this done. And then it's, oh, you know, like, oh, you know.
Yeah, it's for me, it's been like a time thing. Like, I was trying to like go weekly, but like it was too brutal where it was just like trying to, everything that would sort of go into it was, it was too many other things were falling behind. So it just had to become a, just when it's ready kind of thing. But I'm just very lucky that people love to talk and share, like, you know, genuinely share what they're doing. So, and people from like, and people have like offered from sick bands, like the, you know, with people that I know who've just like outright off, and I'm like, that took the awkwardness out of that. Sick. So far so good, but I'm also happy to like have repeat people on as well. You know, that's it's one of those things where it's like, if I'm sold on it, then that's kind of all I need. So I'm you know, a little bit like sort of selfish in that way.
Yeah, you got the guys who just want to, I'll jump on it. You know, I just want to talk drums, talk gear, talk life, talk about coffee, you know, and yet the guys who are like, how much do you pay? Or no.
All that,
Or the, you know, how much do you pay? And like,
I who is paying?
Like, I wish I could, but I can't, you know, I can't, you know, if I had
And what kind of conversation is that as well? It's like, you're only here because of the cash. So, you know, like it's just exactly how real is this exchange, given that, you know, I had to pay for your, you know,
good input.
Friendliest. Yeah, it is what it is. But yeah, so far, so good. I think pretty lucky that Melbourne is full of just heaps of like sick musicians they're not too cool for school, you know, happy to like, you know, donate their time. And
we have a real plethora of people here willing. I think a lot of people I find who are willing to do it, it's just the time, you know, actually getting, because when you think about it, it's not half an hour. Usually it's 2 hours, like it's close to 2 hours now. So
yeah, I write off a whole day pretty much.
So, you know, and I try and like, you know, I've got a family too. I know you've got kids and a family and you got earned money. So I understand, you know, taking time out is valuable, you know. But you know, I'm hopefully, if the project takes off and I work out this last little bit of a hurdle, the idea is to actually get like people like you in, where we'll actually do a playing interview. So
it's just kind of like, fix that in post.
It's like, can you just completely overdub me with Eric Moore, you know? So it would be literally like just one-on-one. So I'd be facing you and you'd play through tracks and you talk about how you develop certain styles and whatnot. And that's a 90-minute episode, like full production, editing. And, you know, the payment kind of is to say, well, I can't pay you for it, but you get a produced 90-minute sick
content.
For you, that you can put on your YouTube and I put on mine, and you know, you share it with the world kind of thing. And that's the idea, because I estimate one episode is going to take me about a week to edit, you know. Full audio, full, you know, talking 10 cameras, you know, like crazy amount of stuff. So I'm hoping, fingers crossed, it's just this last bit is like, it's taken, I've been a month, I'm like, I really kind of need to know, you know. But anyway, mate, thank you so much for coming along. And
dude, thanks for having me. I knew that you know, we had like a particular kinship when, like, you know, like when I met you at Drummers Summit, and then like we're sort of, you know, there's like the Vinny thing, and then like,
oh, the da 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 da.
you're doing Vinny karaoke over just some obscure bootleg with the Chicoria band in like Romania or wherever it was, and it's just like, I dusted that one off the other day. Well, like looking, just like, how good was that song? I just had one of those typical like Vinny binge things, and went back to that one, and it was just like, what an insane thing to capture, like just in the moment. But that whole thing though is like, no other drummer, no one has that thing with a drummer. It's just Vinny. Only Vinny has that. Yeah. It's that this little weird microcosm where it's just like, you know, it's like the which solos you've seen, performances, moments that like everyone is, you know, well, I was going to say it's like, you know, like trading cards, but I remember Vinny actually decrying that aspect of YouTube, which I think might have been at that same gig at Bennett's Lane, where he's imploring everyone to not film.
To be a part of the gig, the performance.
Yeah, and like, I remember him, you know. Yeah, and also, well, and he also was like talking about the what it does to the preciousness of just things existing in that space
in the moment, rather than,
yeah, and then and all these performances being reduced to something like trading cards, which like I guess luckily for us we kind of like, because I'm a lot better for seeing that, you know, that Lead Boots Tokyo solo.
Oh,
that's
like, yeah. It's just like when you're in these kind of conversations, dude, that guy and the time with the place, and you're both like, yeah, me. And you both exactly know. Like when you say, oh, back in 88, he did this on a white custom. White recording custom with a rack, and he goes, oh yeah, he does that with the left hand around that. You're like, yeah, you know, give the most minimal details, and you just know the clip, you know.
It's such a special thing, because like it's even just like a thing where it's like the minutia and like the fan aspect of it, and you just go, and part of it is like, oh, you know, we both share enjoyment in this thing, but it's also this thing of like, your brain's kind of fucked too, like mine. But like, because you're getting
in a good way, you know.
Absolutely in a good way, because it's, you know, my brain's that too. But I reckon I actually only very recently had what I probably consider to be my drum nerd minutia peak, which is so to start with, like, I'm sure you'd be well and truly familiar with, like, there's that, I think it's like a 92 Vinny solo. It's like at a clinic. It was like a last minute replacement thing. He's like playing a red Yamaha. The solo's in like two or three parts or something like that.
Oh, and it's the, like, side of you. And his cymbal moved.
The cymbal keeps falling down.
Yep.
And then someone comes along and fixes it. Right. That's the key. So the thing with that, Marcus Ryan, another legend, sent me a video of Zach Danziger doing a clinic when he's like 19 years old
on a Maple Custom. Yep.
And as the solo is progressing, there is a crash on his right hand side. It starts falling down. I look at the room. I'm like, it's the same kit. Like, it's like the walls. I look at the description and everything. I'm like, it's the same symbol stand for, like, that's, I'm watching like this amazing, like, just, you know, Zach. Yeah. Like, yeah. Zach is, you know, just creating just like pure genius. And then I just see this crash falling over. I look around and I'm just like, it's the same thing from the video. I'm just like, oh, that is peak nerd right there. But like, just, but that's what I love about the whole thing, the whole enterprise. It's just across like.
And you think about it, compared to the rest of the world, like America, everything came out in America first, right? We had to wait nine months before we got it. So now, when you think about it, if we didn't have the resources of like YouTube, where people could upload these amazing VHS bootlegs, like, we would not know what happened back in the 80s and the early 90s until someone said, hey man, I just went to that Vinny clinic. You're like, what are you talking about? Like, what clinic are you talking about? It's like, oh, it's Rochester, New York. You're like, you know. And I think Darren Ferrugia was at that clinic, three-part clinic that was on YouTube. I'm pretty, because I posted something up and Darren said, yeah, I was there. Darren was actually at that clinic. And I was like, what? And I'm like texting him, like, you know, trying to call him, like, I need to rack your brain kind of thing. I actually had I had a Darren moment with Darren. And I said, man, I've got a bootleg of you playing at the Drummers Weekend back in like 97 or 98. And he's like, what? Yeah. And I just said to him, man, you did that thing with your feet, the ostinato. And then he goes, oh, this. And he did it. I'm like, yeah. But then you did the da, da, do, 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 da, 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 do, do. He went, how do you know that? I went, man, I've got a mini disc and I think I've worn the disc out.
Yeah.
So I sent it to him. He listened back to me and goes, oh my God, you're right. I went, so I said, I actually told him like over the phone, I went, I had like a Vinny moment, you know, that drum nerd thing. It's like, yeah, you did this thing at a time in a place and it was awesome. And you're like, oh, the foot thing, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And we've talked, I just want to get him back on the show to kind of talk about, you know, how things are with him and, like, you know, life and talking about drums and whatnot. Cause his YouTube channel's steadily, like, I think he's almost at 1,000 and I'm nowhere near.
Really?
I'm like, I know people go like, oh, 1,000, that's not a lot compared to David Dobrik, but he's, you know, 10, 12, 15 million or whatever, but he's a social media guy.
To me, 1,000 is like, that's 1,000 people that click. Like, to me, clicking that button is like a very deliberate thing. To get 1,000 people to do that is sensational.
It's either people want to see what you're going to do next or people want to see you fail at what you do next. But
I'll take it.
A click is a click, you know, and if you watch me play or talk more than 30 seconds, that's one view, you know.
Yeah.
I hit 1,000 in, it took about, I think about a year. And the next 1,000 took like 2 years. It just, and now I'm about 2,200. But my next goal is 10,000. I'm hoping to get there with in this year if I can. I guess that's a fair way away. Yeah. But, you know, I think it's steadily grown in 3 months, maybe 300 people. And it's like you go, it's not a lot, but for someone who, no frills, low production. You know, it's good. So, but anyway, I'm going to put your socials up. I've seen your website. It's a very, very cool picture by the 12 Apostles, I think it was. Apollo Bay, was it Apollo Bay?
Yes. It's just down from there. We've like Rowan found like just sort of, you got 12 Apostles, go down, drive like 5 minutes, and he just found like this, like it's a proper, you know, little spot where you can, you know, park and just, you know, look around, and just carried all the stuff like 20 meters across and just set up and did it, you know. So that was part of his Tonight Built the Sky film clip that's probably, it's very close to 1 million views, which is pretty rad. Good on him, because he's someone who's been at the online game for a long, long time, and he's, you know, and he's had like a lot of success in some shapes or forms, in various shapes and forms. But this is the first time that, he's going to hit the seven figures with a video. So, it's very close.
That's very cool. Like you know, and when you think about like for not really named players in the world, getting 1 million views is big. You know, it's big. You know, like I'm happy if I get 25,000 on a video. I mean, I still get my certain amount of hate. You know, I get the trolls.
Good. That's good. That's a good sign. Like if some, like I was talking to someone about this the other day, where it's like, that's, I'm waiting for that, because if someone goes out of their way to actually, like, if they, you're doing something worthwhile, if someone feels compelled to actually, they have to express it to you, because you only do that to something that you want to pull down. But if it makes you feel, because you know, you only inspire insecurity in someone if you've done something worthwhile, because otherwise it's nothing to pull down.
It's funny. Someone had a really big on a video, a bit of an attack, you know, about my playing, and I was like, I'm not going to feed the troll and let them, you know, dig up. So to speak. And they actually kept on answering back to their own comments, like, and just kept going and going. And I kind of worked out, you know, if it took you a minute or two to write this comment, and then you've come back again and you've come back again, I've actually commented, because you've written seven long, we're talking long, minute long comments to really type it out. And I said, that means you would have watched the entirety of this video the entire time about seven times. So I said, you've subscribed, you've called me out, like you've trolled me, you've watched the video now collectively seven times. That's 70 minutes of content you've watched or hearing it while you're typing. Thanks for coming along. And I was able to, I actually pinned all their posts so they couldn't delete them. So they actually sat there and they sent me an email saying, oh, hey man, can you delete those comments? I went, fortunately, at this present time, I'm not in a position to where I can be near a computer, but maybe I'll get back to this, you know? And they've just kept them there. So you know, sometimes you get a comment and it's like a cheese grater on your forehead. You're like, oh, it's real. I need to answer this. And then someone in America who has a like 500,000, like a YouTuber mate said, you know, don't feed the troll. Let other people come in and defend you if they can. And they have, they've come in gone, well, if you can do better, you know, you've got two videos, one from your iPhone or one from a GoPro if you're driving down the road.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, because every time they comment, they come back by time.
Yeah.
And I kept saying, and I'll eventually chime in and say, you've been back, you've answered the comment a dozen times, which means that's 12 views you've added to the count. You know, and you, and every time you come back.
What is your goal?
What are you trying to achieve? So, you know, I get my, I'd say probably out of every 100 comments, one is average. Like, just like, you know, oh, it's like, oh man, you know, I've been watching for 5 minutes and you haven't got to playing yet. Okay. I don't know what you're going to do. I can't go back and just cut the first 5 minutes out, you know. Some dude playing with a hi-hat clutch. I mean, what am I going to do, you know? Yeah. So, but anyway, I'll, I'm going to post up all your socials, going to post up your website. Bread's Benefit. And now, Bread's Benefit, that's on Spotify. Is that, it is on Spotify?
It's Spotify and pretty much everywhere.
Pretty much everywhere. So I'm going to link all up. Thanks for coming along, mate. Everybody check out Ross' page. Check out everything he does because he's I know when I first saw you play, I actually wanted to, I think I put the sticks down and stood up when it was my shot to play at the shed and I went, no, I can't do this. No, I can't follow that. I'm the only trad fusion guy in Chop City and out of all of you, I'm like watching Rob and your feet because I think you just came out with something. I was like, you're like, and you're like, I'm like, I can't follow this. I can't.
I had to deal with like following Stan or someone like that. Where I'm just like, oh, I can't do that stuff.
and then I'm like, nope. Well, I guess I'm screwed.
You know? Nah, man, that just means like you know, you wind up being Gad at the Buddy Rich Memorial where you just have played the sickest, you know, sickest field. Just go, it's fine. Yeah.
Well, it does, as you said, you know, chicks get the thrill. Was it Phil's get the thrill? Phil's get the chicks, but the bill through. Oh, what was that saying? chicks get the bills. That's right. Chicks, was it? Phil's get the chicks, but the groove pays the bill. Oh, something. I don't know. I saw
something like that.
It was a very Gad thing. I think it was a Gad thing. I can't remember. How bad my memory is. All right, man. I'm going to stop recording. Thank you so much for being here. I appreciate it. And hang out. I'll quickly chat to you about something and then go have some dinner.
Love your work.
Thanks,
love your
work, mate.
Thanks for having me.
Bye.
Thanks again for listening, everyone. One last reminder, if you like what you've heard and find it useful, you can support by liking, following, leaving reviews, subscribing, sharing on social media, etc. I've also got a Patreon page where if you happen to feel like it, you can donate just $1 a month, which helps keeps the cost down of this podcast, which is www.patreon.com/robbrenz. And you can also go to my website, www.rob-brenz.com. If you just want to get in touch or suss out some more info, there's more content there. And you can subscribe to my newsletter, which contains additional content, as well as my Lunchtime Lick series for all the drummers out there. See you next time.